Jacob, welcome to the Freedom Footprint Show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you again, Jacob. Last time we met was on Madeira, if I'm not wrong.
That's right.
And
I'm not.
Yeah. You're a big Bitcoin walker. So how was the Bitcoin walks on Madeira? I missed out on most of them, I'm ashamed to say. I had plans on walking levadas and stuff, but didn't get to that this time.
Madeira is such a great place for that. You know, it's such a beautiful island, and it has plenty of labyrinths, in the Levada. So it's easy to, very, very easy to get lost in nature there. I had a bit of a challenge over there because I wanted to make sure that when we did a Bitcoin walk over there, it would be safe, you know, for everybody who comes around. And I wanted it to be easy and wide enough so that people can mingle and, you know, change groups and have different conversations. So luckily with the great team from Free Madeira and the Bitcoin Atlantis conference, they helped me find the right circular route. So that was a really good one. It was tough to organize it in the sense that, levadas are a bit further up, so you had to, get on the bus to get there basically. So I had to, I had some constraints around the limit of the seats on the bus. So I had to put up like a little registration form where people would sign up and say, okay, I need two places. Basically I had a cap of 55 seats on the bus. Short anecdote is that basically I put up a type form registration kind of thing. And because it was a free event and a side event and people wanted to do that anyway, I kind of ignored, I announced it on Twitter and kind of ignored, the results. I didn't check it for a couple of days. So a few days later, I log in back and there's like 65 people who signed up already. So I've only got 55 seats on the bus and it's still like more than two months until the conference happens. So I expect that there'll be more people who would want to come. And so I reached out to the organizers and say, look, is there any chance we could do two walks because this would probably be, enough. And they said, yeah, we can do, a morning walk and then the afternoon walk and this would be fine. So I was like kind of relieved and left it and forgot about it, had different things related to family and stuff. And 2 weeks before the conference, I kind of logged in again. And there's 220 people signed up. So it's a good problem to have. I closed the registration by then and decided we would do, free walks. So there was a 9 o'clock, a 12 o'clock and a 2 o'clock walk. Physically, I couldn't do it myself. Like the middle one was tricky because I just couldn't be there in the location to pick those guys up. But I quickly assembled, a team of Bitcoiner friends who I knew before, and they agreed to lead the walk in the middle. So I covered the one at 9 o'clock and one at 2 o'clock, and my friends covered the one at 12. And everybody was happy.
So before you got all this sorted out, did you wake up in the middle of the night and from having a nightmare of sailor saying there is no second bus,
there is no second bus? Yeah, I mean, it was quite an experience. So first of all, I was quite overwhelmed, as you can imagine, trying to make sure that everything is organized nicely. So when I saw the bus in front of the stadium, I kind of just went and say hello to everybody and wanted to greet everybody. And I did a massive, massive faux pas. I didn't say hello to the driver. I didn't basically, build the interaction with him. So I just said, hello, everything okay? Okay. We didn't have, any sort of small talk. And we started going to the place. He took us to the wrong place. Then we had to kind of, call the company, and the guy was a bit funny. He refused to speak in English with me. He pretended he doesn't speak English. And then somebody who actually spoke Portuguese stepped in and turned out that the guy actually speaks fluent English, probably better than mine. And we expressed what we had to say. And he said, you don't tell us where we go. You don't tell us. It's like, well, I called the company yesterday and they confirmed that you know all the details and everything. In the end, he took us to the right place. I bought him a coffee, and you know, we had a chat, and we made friends, so to speak, from the position we first met. So, but it was, you know, an experience as well.
Is he orange pilled now then?
I don't think so. I think you know, we had definitely planted some seed, because literally when we were on the bus, Bitcoin hit all time high. And you know, there was like getting to the newest heights, and we celebrated like, okay guys, because they were 40, like 64 or 65, and yeah, it was really a fun ride and something special about it as well. Yeah, you know, we had a chat with all the Bitcoiners and him in the end, and he told us his life story, that he'd already worked for like 10 years in the UK, he was the bus driver here. And then he came over to Madeira, where he's from, and yeah, and basically shared his story. We tried to orange pill him, but he wasn't interested in getting sad. So I think he'll come around at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've taken bus rides on Madeira before, and they can be scary. They can be pretty, yeah, it's, you know, everyday edge, or whatever you may call it. So yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Can you give our listeners a TLDR on who you are, Jacob, and how this whole Bitcoin walk became such a big part of your life? I mean, I love walking with Bitcoiners myself. So, please tell us the story.
So yeah, I'm Jacob. You know, I'm a humble plebs. I just I just go for a walk and talk about Bitcoin with anybody who wants to come along. And it started like 2 years ago. I'm based in Edinburgh in Scotland right now. I started going out because me and my partner, we had our second child here, and I wanted to find some time for myself when we were like, our little one was like 3 months old. So we said like, okay, you know, I'm going to go for a walk, just, you know, a couple of hours, and then I'm back. And I would listen to podcasts, I would listen to audiobooks, and got, you know, getting deeper down the rabbit hole. And at some point I got so overwhelmed and said like, look, you know, I don't have much time to commit myself to more than the two couple of hours a week. But I'm so overwhelmed that I really want to, you know, to talk to someone. I want to make sure that I'm not insane, because it sounds like, you know, this thing is going to change the whole world and fix a lot of things in the world. So I put up, you know, a meetup page, and people started coming. First it was like, you know, a couple of guys, one guy, two guys, you know, and I would always have a conversation, see like what they think, and so, like how, you know, discuss anything that I heard. And I noticed that there is a certain pattern, and those Bitcoin walks and the way you, the way I started, you know, understanding it and talking about that works a little bit like, you know, like going to the gym, where, you know, first you go to the gym and it's not really comfortable. It's not your thing. Like you feel awkward, maybe. And the more you build up that muscle of kind of, you know, repetition and going through this whole thing over and over again and meeting those people. And, you know, I was always sticking to three things, right? So if I didn't know what to talk about, I would just say, so, you know, self-custody, that's an invention, right? And like starting discussing things from that point on, or like finite scarcity. Or the third thing was privacy. And, you know, these are the three most kind of anchoring topics that would take us to very different places. And in the, you know, in the process, I noticed that it is much easier to talk to people when you're walking, when you're next to someone, because then you're not stationary. So, you know, you're moving, you got better blood circulation, you got fresh air. And also there is no judgment. So like, you know, if we sit in a bar and we're having a conversation, it's usually me telling you, you telling me kind of conversation. So there's always this kind of power struggle where, you know, I'm trying to find out, you know, figure out like, what is your angle? Like, what are you trying to tell me or sell to me? Whereas when we're walking, it's, you just focus on the road ahead. You focus on your horizon, on your next step, and you're completely different. Like you're way more open-minded in this setup. So it comes easier to have a meaningful conversation. And actually, the way I learned most is by not talking at all. It's just by listening other people talk. People were prompting questions, and you would just be there and kind of analyze in your own pace what this thing is. And, you know, I've been in many conversations where Like they were way too advanced for me or too technical for me. So I would have to catch up later on and do my lessons. But they kind of put, you know, the basics in my understanding of Bitcoin and how it works, so that I can then do my homework and then come back again and maybe ask some more questions, you know. So it's a really nice cycle to it to get onboarded, because, you know, Bitcoin is it's a beast. There's so many layers to it, and it means something different potentially to everybody. So to find my meaning, I had to kind of go through it over and over again, discover it in my own ways, and you know, share my experiences as well. So I found that extremely useful in me getting more confident about what I'm doing, how I'm allocating my time and my energy. And yeah, and I made lots of friends. You know, I've been living in UK for 15 years, more than that now. I'm originally from Poland, and we tend to socialize and visit each other a lot in Poland. So, you know, it's normal to come to my house or to your house, because that's what people do. We have guests. In UK, you go to a pub. You don't come to each other's houses at all. And I noticed that, you know, whenever I tried to go into any meetups in UK, you know, I'm considering myself a cheerful guy and being open-minded, but those meetups, like usual meetups, they were usually there was something wrong with them. Like I couldn't force myself to, you know, to connect with those people and to follow up and to build lasting relationships with anyone I met until Bitcoin and Bitcoin Walk specifically. Because at this point, you know, I started making really, really great friendships. I think I found, you know, a couple of people I can call my mentors as well, who basically, you know, explained a lot of things to me, both from technical as well as spiritual way. So I find, you know, I think that there's some special thing about this going for a walk and having a, you know, a casual talk away from the screen, away from, you know, from a pub, from you know, sitting and drinking beer. It's just different.
Absolutely. So a natural follow-up question: what does Bitcoin mean to you, Jacob?
Well, you know, it means hope to me. It absolutely means hope. You know, I live right now in soggy Scotland. It's raining quite a lot here, and you know, when it gets cold, the winter is, you know, it's not extreme cold as, you know, we would have it in Poland or in Scandinavia, but it's just miserable for a long time. And I met a couple of guys and who felt the same as I did. I just get naturally depressed here, you know, because of lack of sun, because of lack of vitamin D and stuff. So I noticed that, you know, in the last couple of weeks, we went for the Bitcoin walk on the day of the halving, and we kind of wrapped it up to say, wait, okay, so how was it? And a friend of mine who's like a long time Bitcoin, he said, like, do you know what? This one was actually, this cycle was much easier. The bear market was much easier because of Bitcoin walk, because we could actually, you know, have each other as a support network to, you know, to come and have our group therapy kind of thing. This has resonated very, very highly with me. So I think that to me, this is, Bitcoin will help me find my family, help me find, you know, people that I have a common denominator with, you know, the 21 million. So in this sense, it's life changing for sure. I feel that, you know, some values that I had deeply kind of rooted in my upbringing as a child, which I thought I disconnected from and maybe I lost at some point in my life, you know, pursuing career, chasing the fiat money that is kind of, you know, basically never ending game. And I felt myself, you know, at peace because I know that I'm part of the game that is, you know, has a fixed supply, and I have my little tiny little share in it, and nobody can take it away from me. So that to me, this is like, it gives me so much peace of mind and so much calmness and you know, positive attitude and hope for the future, that, you know, I stick to that. And so I kind of cherish this feeling and try to spread it around.
Fantastic. It sounds a bit like one of those Alcoholics Anonymous groups, like I'm Jacob and I'm a bitcoholic. Like,
yeah, it does. And you know, it's interesting because I went to a meetup yesterday in the University of Edinburgh that was related to Ayn Rand organization, and you know, basically they were discussing how the government is creating money, how it's stealing from from the people for inflation and then other stuff. And I felt like, okay, well, that's, you know, like these guys should really dig Bitcoin and they should get that. So I started interacting with those people and they were like, oh no, but cryptocurrency, this is speculation. And so like, well, first of all, you need to learn your lesson and differentiate between Bitcoin and crypto. And maybe, you know, it's better to actually experience that, to try doing that and learn some more rather than just doing, you know, a witchery and burning witches on, you know, when you're not sure what you're dealing with. So yeah, in this sense, you know, I think that maybe I took things for granted going out there, as in this is natural, like this conversation is definitely going into Bitcoin. To me, that was natural. For them, it wasn't. But at least I think I maybe put some, you know, seeds in their brains as well. So maybe they can research that.
Fantastic. Well, so I think this concept is really interesting, and it's always nice to see community development here within the Bitcoin ecosystem. And so, can you maybe go into a little more detail about sort of the organization of all of this? Like, what exactly is the Bitcoin Walk organization, and what you're working on specifically with that, and what is sort of more of a community development type of thing? Like, how can others get involved?
Of course. So the easiest way to get involved, you know, this is really simple. You just create your Bitcoin Walk chapter wherever you are. We've now got over 15 cities around the world where people meet up, you know, on every Saturday, and they go for a walk. And, you know, it's a free format. And I always encourage people to basically be open-minded and start with those three things, you know, discuss the impact of self-custody, finite scarcity and privacy, and how this is important. And believe me, like people who understand roughly those three things, they can wander to many, many different paths in their discussions. The easiest way is to either, you know, to go to bitcoinwalk.org website, see if there's any, but probably there won't be any chapter in your city. I mean, there's like 15 or 16 chapters right now. But there's also a link to set up a new chapter. So what this will do is it will take you to a very short, like small form where, you know, I'll get the location of your walk, maybe some information and your Telegram username. And I would set up a page and a Telegram group for yourself so you can actually announce it and be the one who starts the walk. You know, people struggle with the idea that it's like, who's going to come? Maybe I don't know how to manage that. It's really simple. Like if you just trust your instincts, as you did with getting into Bitcoin, and you take for granted that the other person will also share this common denominator with you, you will already have things to talk about, and you have a great time, and potentially, you know, meet someone that will change your life as well.
Yeah, Bitcoin is a walkie-talkie, and I know for a fact that there are Bitcoin walks happening in more than 15 cities every Saturday, though, because not all Bitcoin, believe it or not, but not all Bitcoiners have, you know, filling out online forms as their favorite hobby. So these things are happening, off band also. And I think like, in Germany, the German community is fantastic with the Ein und Zwanzig thing that has like spread to every major city in the country at this point. And there are a lot of Bitcoin walks happening over there. I know for a fact. Yeah, pleb walks. Yeah. So how connected are you to the pleb walk community in Germany? Like, is this an international thing?
Yeah, we've got, three or four chapters in Germany. I think the Cologne one is the one in Cologne is the biggest one. There's a big one that's happening not every Saturday. I think it's once a month in Berlin. They go to Grunewald and they walk over there, beautiful place. So, you know, and again, you know, I'm not like the idea is to kind of help people maybe organize that. I don't necessarily consider this, you know, to be the only right way to do that. Just find your way, and I'm here to kind of help you maybe with getting the word out and do a little bit of marketing, whatever you want to call that, to encourage people and to get the word out, to be aware and to find your Bitcoin walk.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Orange Pill app?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that's probably a good place to do events like this and Bitcoin walks and whatnot, because it's all about finding other Bitcoiners in real life, right? And
yeah,
I think regardless if you're using that or using anything else, like the real world connections are so much more important than we think, because like whenever I've experienced a time or a place or both where there is a Bitcoin community in one single location at the same time, that and then all the problems just vanish, they just go away, and you can just talk about whatever you want. You can find that little percentage of stuff you disagree about, and that's where the interesting conversation happens, instead of just automatically thinking that the other guy is a bad guy because he disagrees on this or that. and Bitcoin itself just removes all the barriers and removes all the financial problems that one or more of the participants in this group may or may not have. But it's just better living through cryptography.
Absolutely. And you know, you're right in saying that, you know, the meet space, you know, meeting in real life is very different. And I think it's going to have a big comeback with, you know, with all the information, all the noise coming from, you know, social media, all the mainstream propaganda, and, you know, now we're getting into like AI fake news. So, you know, we're going to see, you know, influencers or politicians saying crazy stuff, and you will never know, like, is that for real? Like, is this true, or is this being manipulated? Because things are getting so abstract, then it's really becoming weird. So getting this validation from your peers is going to be very, very meaningful. You know, and one thing that kind of comes back to me about this Truman Show we're living in is that, you know, the fact that you know, in the newspaper, the Times, from the 3rd of January 2009, you've got, you know, the headline that Satoshi put in the Genesis blog. And also you have the main picture with saying that, you know, Israel prepares, like IDF prepares to enter Gaza. And to me, this is like, okay, we're 15 years later, and this headline could, and both of those headlines, right? Chancellor on the brink of second bailout, third or fourth or whatever the number is. And the analogy to the situation in the Middle East, they still stand. So I can't comprehend, like, how this is just surreal. It's getting absurd.
Yeah, it's like time stopped, and the time chain sort of took over.
Indeed.
Okay, Knut, let's talk about our sponsors.
Yeah, I hate when you do this to me, Luke. I mean, ad reads on the internet are so cringe, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
This time around, we thought we might just talk about our friends that help the show happen. And a few of those friends are Orange Pill App and the Bitcoin Advisor. And first of all, Bitbox, the hardware wallet of choice for the Freedom Footprint Show. We really like this device. It's Swiss made. It's very slick. And it's Bitcoin only.
It's super easy to use. I love the Bitbox. I was able to use it with multi-sig. I tried out all of the fancy features. So it's really simple to use. But the thing is, it's got a lot of power. They're constantly developing it. Everything is open source, so you can verify that it's doing what you expect it to do. They have their own desktop wallet and app that you can control the Bitbox with and sign your transactions and all that, see your balance. But you can also use it with other desktop wallets like Sparrow and even others. So yeah, it's great. And the team is fantastic. We've really enjoyed working with them. They're aligned with our ethos, which is really awesome.
Yeah. And then we are Bitcoin Advisors. We're working with a company in Australia, some really awesome people. And we can advise you about Bitcoin heritage. How does that work, Luke?
Yeah, exactly. So the basic idea is that you get set up with a multi-sig wallet that has you holding one key. Bitcoin Advisor holds another key. And then there's even a third-party service that holds the final one. And we were a bit skeptical about this at first, but there really is no way of the two other parties colluding to use your key. And the thing is, you get the peace of mind if you lose your hardware device, your signing device, your seed phrase, whatever. You can go retrieve your funds and you're safe. And the important thing, the big use case is inheritance. What happens after you pass on? And the Bitcoin advisor is there to fill that role. And even if you don't like us, there are plenty of other Bitcoin advisors to choose from. You can go down the list on the website, find someone you like. But if you want to talk to us, you're welcome to do so. And you can send us a message and book a call.
Yeah. And we have the Orange Pill app, which is a great way of finding other Bitcoiners around your area. And you don't have to worry about giving away too much information about yourself, because the Orange Pill app only gives away your approximate location. So it's a great way to socialize with Bitcoiners in real life, which is where the real magic happens.
Exactly. The Bitcoin social layer, so they say. It can be from where you live, or if you're out traveling, or you're at a Bitcoin conference. I connected with tons of people over this last couple of years of the Orange Pill app running through it. They've got events. They've got group chats. It's a really powerful app. And you know everyone's paying to be there, so you're not getting all this spam. It's really a great setup. And it's a feature, not a bug, to have everyone pay to get in. You really know that everyone there is high signal.
Finally, you should use code FREEDOM on the internet here and there. For instance, when you buy your ticket to BTC Prague, if you haven't done that yet, where you'll meet me and Luke and a bunch of other great Bitcoiners. But you could also use the code FREEDOM to buy a Bitbox, for instance, and some various other places on the internet. So don't forget to do that. And don't forget to like, subscribe, click the damn bell, and brush your teeth. All of that helps.
Exactly. So back to the show. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about kind of how you're seeing the Bitcoin ecosystem right now, like the state of the world. We're just post-halving here. What are you hoping to see come out of the near future with Bitcoin?
Well, you know, this year is interesting because we have, I can't remember, but a lot of elections happening in different countries. And I think it's going to be a weird year, in the sense that people don't want to make, you know, too radical or crazy things as they campaign for the elections. You know, you can already see like every single candidate for US president seat is already, you know, has Bitcoin on their political agenda one way or another. Of course, you know, these are politicians, so they will never, you know, follow through everything they say. But it's getting interesting. And I think, that until probably around, you know, next half a year, I don't see much changing. And then probably, you know, there's going to be some bigger movements and things will start escalating, you know. And from sort of institutional adoption, we've got the ETFs, of course, and they're, you know, getting into Bitcoin like crazy. We've got now the ETFs in Hong Kong, so effectively probably just say China. We've got, I think, South Korea coming into the game as well, the ETF game. I think Australia announced something. So, you know, those big institutions, they will start, you know, putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And the supply is, you know, it's just shrinking with, you know, the current epoch. So there's going to be a lot of demand. And I think, unfortunately for plebs, for people, it will only become... This is my opinion. Maybe you disagree, but I think the adoption of Bitcoin can happen through pain. So if there is no pain, like, you know, in the UK, which is completely ignorant of how massively, you know, this technology and this thing will change humanity, they don't have, like, people in UK don't have the need to adopt Bitcoin. They, you know, they rely on pound sterling. They don't feel like change is needed. So I think, you know, unless you get into the situation like, you know, Turkey or Argentina or Venezuela, and you actually see that by, you know, by hyperinflation or just very high inflation, your savings and your money is being diluted, then you start looking for escape. Unless you experience that, people are complacent and just living, you know, a happy life. Hakuna Matata.
Well, don't you think that wherever there's inflation, there is pain, or there will be pain at some point?
Absolutely.
And that inflation, like the way I see it, the hockey stick curve meme is real. Like the inflation is not getting any better anytime soon. Normal inflation is just hyperinflation in slow-mo. So there will be pain. Like, different people will experience it differently and at different times and to different magnitudes, but it's still pain. It's somewhere. And it does create Bitcoiners, I believe.
It does, yeah. And I just wish that, you know, people were smarter before they get hurt, before they get into pain. I got really good friends who are like super, you know, super smart, well-educated, have PhDs and stuff. And I'm trying to orange pill them and, you know, tell them about Bitcoin. And they're just fed up with me. They don't want to listen to me anymore. Like, don't just stop talking about Bitcoin. Let's just talk about your music or something else. And this friend of mine, he's telling me that basically there are two kinds of people: people who are into Bitcoin and who are not. And I say I don't agree with that. I think that there are people who understand how Bitcoin changes the world, and people who are, as Saylor says, intellectually lazy to do their homework and to understand the potential that it brings together.
You said something there, like your music. You make music.
I'm a vivid listener.
Oh, okay.
So that's another thing. I recently got an invite to come to BTC Prague, and unfortunately, I already booked this weekend for Download Festival, so I'll be going to Donington, and I'm taking my friend for his birthday. So and I'll miss Prague, but we'll have a good time anyway.
Donington, there's a lot of metal there, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're metalheads over here as well. So yeah.
I saw it. Look, I think you're a Meshuggah fan, right?
Yeah, I am.
You are
a big Meshuggah fan. Are they coming to Donington?
I don't think they are now. But I mean, this year the lineup is a bit weird.
All right.
There's going to be Offspring, for example, which I'd love to see them, but that's my teenage years. Not metal so much, but there'll be some cool band. Well, there'll be Pantera as well, making a comeback. So,
oh yeah, yeah. We saw that. Me and Luke went to that's like the first concert. It's the only concert we've ever been to, Luke, right? Oh, we've been to the Satoshi Nakamoto things, I guess. But in Prague last year, we went to see Pantera after the conference. It's fucking amazing, even though it's just half a Pantera, but with two very competent other musicians doing their thing. And it was great.
Yeah, I always love to look into it. Yeah,
you said the world is made up of two types of people. The ones who can extrapolate from incomplete data sets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was the joke.
got it.
All right. Well, you're gonna have a bit of editing to do here, Luke.
Yeah. No, we have to leave that pause in a little bit. Otherwise, it doesn't land.
And the ones who don't, yeah.
No, great stuff. So, you've given us a little bit of, perspective on the situation in the UK. How much are you also involved in the community in Poland? Like I've moved from Canada to Finland. I've got sort of feet in both countries and keep an eye on both and everywhere at the same time. So yeah, how much are you involved with the community in Poland?
To be fair, I only met the guys from Bajisha Jeden from the 21 community in Madeira. I haven't been living in Poland for a while, so I'm not there too often. But we had a great connection. I didn't really realize that that there were so many Bitcoiners there. I had a massive surprise moment when I found out that Pierre Corbin is actually he's Polish technically, or speaks Polish better than me probably. So I always talk to him in English, and then it says okay, actually, I just witnessed him speaking Polish. Like, why do I talk to you in English if you're speaking Polish fluently? And so yeah, we had a good chat, and unfortunately, I missed the European halving party in Warsaw. I couldn't make it for family reasons, but I have a lot of sympathy for everybody who's into Bitcoin in Poland, because again, you know, the consciousness and the open-mindedness in general public in Poland is going to be very tough to overcome. Like people live in, you know, in the past pretty much. And I'm super, super happy to see that there are so many prominent and bright guys and girls in Bitcoin already.
Yeah, yeah. I went to the halving party in Warsaw and it was great. And like I got the feeling like that Warsaw and Poland, like you guys, like Eastern Europe in general, Eastern Europe is sort of a weird term, but all you poor countries that were invaded by the by the evil empire, like you know where the end of the obedience road. You know what doing what the government tells you lead to, or at least your parents do. So that's the thing. I think people in Eastern Europe are more like. They get Bitcoin earlier because they know the dangers. I really feel this discrepancy, like, and this difference between the East and the West in Europe. Like,
I think what you're referring here is basically complacency, right? Like, people are not so complacent. People
exactly
and try to find a way, to not to play on the accord of the governments. Yeah,
it's the obedience thing.
You know, if you're into history and you look into the how, like, you know, the end of and you know the collapse of Soviet Union and the role that two particular people played in it. I'm referring to Lech Wałęsa, you know, the first president of the Free Poland, and the guy from the Union of the Shipyard from Gdańsk, and the Pope John Paul II.
Yes,
you know,
I remember this. This is my childhood.
So that was kind of, you know, great. And there was a lot of, you know, the solidarity and the spirit of solidarity that it has done a lot of good things, you know, for Poland. So the church played their role in the history of Poland. Today, not so much. You know, they, like, I'm not very much, you know, a supporter of the church. I think they should basically be more servants to people who are in need, whereas in Poland that's not how it works today. But what's interesting is that, you know, back in the days, back in, you know, 70s and 80s, where you know Poland was under a communist regime, you had you know all the mainstream, well, all the only media there was, so newspapers and public TV, basically pumping propaganda through their, you know, for their tubes. And there was, like, you couldn't listen to that. It was just disgusting. So basically, USSR was the good guys and the West was the filthy, you know, spoiled capitalists. That's all we had kind of pumped in, you know, all the time. And what was interesting is that actually the church, Catholic Church, which was quite active in this time, they had their ritual on Sunday Mass. So people would go to the church. And this would be the platform for people to find out the truth, to learn a little more about, you know, the geopolitical situation, like what is going on, like what are the risks. And priests at that time played a significant role in fighting against the government. And I noticed that, you know, this kind of in real life meetup and the, you know, platform with the community that's united around one thing is somewhat similar to what we do with Bitcoin Walk, where we, you know, we meet every Saturday, we discuss things. I hope that we'll never come to the point where, you know, there'll be a big crackdown such a big crackdown on Bitcoin that, you know, we would need to, you know, go in real life and try to, you know, whisper and, you know, discuss what's going to come.
So how is that in Poland? Like, is the separation of church and state? Like, are the church and state separated, I guess? And have they been for how long? And like,
so it's a very tricky thing because the church in Poland is still financed by the state. They've got, you know, the Concordat law. I'm not sure if this is the translation, but basically they're still being subsidized by the state. They are always very, very active during, you know, any sort of elections. So it's become very corrupt in this sense. So that's why I don't support Polish church at all. You've got priests and archbishops who are millionaires. It's just crazy. They don't help the poor. They're literally benefiting from the continuing effect. There is one guy. He's like the biggest fucking douchebag in the world. He's got a big empire built on the subsidies coming from the government. You know, from like every single ministry, he can take some money. He would take it. And there was some time when he got given two cars, very expensive cars. And in a statement publicly, he said that he got them from a homeless guy who gave it to them and died. This is the level of absurd that is going on over there. So you just beyond any sort of decency that a man should have, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So is the state just another organized religion? Or what's your opinion?
I think, it's different in different countries. When you're in Poland and you live between, strong Germany and the Eastern Bloc, let's call it this way, your perspective is somewhat different. Like we've gone through history many, many times where Poland was attacked from left and right, and then center as well. So in this sense, I think the state should provide like minimal amount of services where they actually secure the basic needs of society. But they should be public servants. So, this is a good thing that Bitcoin does. It defunds the state. Like money that's being put out and saved in Bitcoin and spent in Bitcoin as well, on Bitcoin market. This money is not going to fund, wars. It's not going to fund any church, for example. I don't want to be paying for the church, for my taxes or whatever. I'm opting out. I saw a tweet somewhere that basically Bitcoin kind of brings it back, makes them public servants. So they're again supposed to be serving the public in a way that's not benefiting from the public, but just improving it, right?
Yeah, I feel the same. If not, like I'm unsure whether that is even possible, though. Like even on a Bitcoin standard, that the state will be completely like funded by voluntary payment, or like that they won't. I struggle seeing a state of the world in which states are more good than bad, because I think that they're a net bad at the moment, and I can sort of logically reason myself to that position. Like the more consensual interactions there are between people, and the fewer forceful ones, the flip side of that, like the better. So I never see like a state of the world where you wouldn't want to fight for a smaller state. It can always, maybe it will always exist in some way, shape or form, but you could always fight to make it smaller. Like there's no, it can always shrink.
Yeah. And you're right. I think with the transformation that needs to happen from where we are today, the fiat system and the legacy governments, whatever you want to call them, to a Bitcoin standard and the future this can bring. I don't necessarily think that, it's going to be a very smooth transition. I think that you basically need to cut that off and start living again on this new standard. And basically, the old standard doesn't recognize the new one, and the new standard is kind of laughing at, the old standard because it's just not efficient at all. And if you're in the Bitcoin space and you've done your lesson and you've watched this space for a while, then you know that you're aware that the quality of everything, education, healthcare, services, is completely different on both, right?
Yeah, it's so much better on a Bitcoin standard. Like if you just choose to live in that world, then you see it. And it's absolutely clear. And the old world is obsolete already. Like you can choose to live in the future now. And it's wonderful. If all the problems are with the old world. So that's the thing. I totally agree.
We have just a few more things that we want to mention, companies that we like and other things that we want you to be aware of.
Absolutely. First of all, we're writing a new book, The Inverse of Clown World, and it will be released on Infinity Day. You know when that is, don't you?
August 21st. And we'll,
August 21st. And we'll have a release party in Riga during Baltic Honey Badger. You can get 10% off your ticket there by using the code FREEDOM, just as you can in Prague.
Don't forget about Prague. We're going to be in Prague.
No, don't forget about Prague. No, do all the things and do all the other Bitcoin things as well. Use BTC Pay Server. I mean, use Wasabi while it still works. And
it'll still work after they shut down the CoinJoin service. Just saying, it's a good wallet and the team will still be there.
Yeah. And I mean, we are Bitcoin maxis, I think some people would call us monetary maximalists. So, you know, resist the spam, resist the shitcoin narratives and do the thing. Like, subscribe and brush your teeth. FFS.
And if you want to support the show directly, the best way to do that is on Fountain. You can send us sats as you listen in value for value or send us a boost. We appreciate it every time. And it's just a great app to listen to your podcasts on anyway. So yeah, go check out Fountain if you listen to your podcasts on some other app. And of course, as Knut says, like, subscribe and brush your teeth. Leave a comment on the YouTube. It helps with the algorithm, all this stuff. Share it around on the social media. We appreciate it. It helps us grow and it helps the freedom message spread, which increases all of our freedom footprints.
Onwards and upwards, comrades. And yeah, follow the orange glowing light. Full speed ahead.
All right, back to the show.
Awesome. Well, hey, so Jacob, is there anything else coming up in the near future that you'd like to direct our listeners to? What are your plans in the near future?
Near future? Well, personally, I'm doing a big jump. You know, I've been brought up in a sort of rather conservative Polish family, living in a small town, going to school, going to high school, going to uni, kind of, you know, plowing through. It didn't even take, you know, a year gap when I was at Warsaw School of Economics. So I kind of, you know, ticked off the boxes, then got out of the education system. And I was like, yes, you know, I've done it. I don't have to learn or study those things that were not necessarily fun for me. And I can now go to work and, you know, build my career, whatever. So being brought up in this mindset made me realize that, okay, you know, I'm now a father of two boys. And we moved to Edinburgh because we said, like, okay, it's a nice, peaceful city. We live in the catchment that has the best school in Edinburgh. And we said, okay, I'm going to let my kids go to school. They're going to get the, you know, best education I can provide them with. And that was my belief system until I went to Madeira and until I bumped into a bunch of homeschooling kids or unschooling parents. And until I saw that there were three stages, the main stage, development stage, and the kids stage. And when I saw that there, you know, like you get to realize that Bitcoin is 15 years old and you got, you know, 12-year-olds, 13-year-old, 14-year-old presenting on the stage, building together, networking, you know, and being so confident in doing so, you just realize that these kids are going to be so much ahead of their peers, you know, compared to what the future is going to look like in 10 years from now or 15 years from now when they'll be, you know, entering the labor market or job market. Then you kind of, that's triggered something inside of me. You know, I was talking to Daniel Prince. I was talking to other guys. I was talking to Rob and Sylvia from A Place to Be. It was like no rocket science to me. And because I work remotely anyway, I made my decisions and I decided to take, you know, responsibility for my kids as well. And along with my family, we'll be moving to Madeira. So we'll be moving to Madeira to live with, you know, close by to these guys and hopefully, you know, get to hang around together. Let our kids be together and educate them together as parents. So that's the next big thing that is in my life. But I also think that, you know, it was unthinkable for me to even, you know, think about those things, taking the kids out of the education system until I embraced and I saw them with my eyes. And I think it's very similar to people to making the jump from the fiat system to the Bitcoin system, where you're, you know, so deeply embedded in that and everybody around you is so deeply embedded in that, you know, it feels like you're being crazy doing that. But now I feel even more confident this is the right way because with the development in technology, three years ago, we didn't have any sort of inklings of what AI will be doing, how it will be changing our lives today, right? And today, we're taking for granted. Everybody's using AI almost if you're working with a computer, chances are that you're using some ChatGPT or Midjourney or something like that on a daily basis. So 10 years from now, 15 years from now, I don't think this is going to slow down. This is going to grow exponentially. And the education system that we have in traditional schooling is not going to keep up. It's already outdated. So I really don't think that this will make a even linear progress.
Jacob, this is so fantastic to hear. I mean, to be a part of this and like all these aspects, these different aspects of Bitcoin, and just hearing your story and you name dropping all of our friends here and the things they're doing on Madeira, just fantastic. I mean, and I completely agree. The education system as is completely outdated. It's obsolete already, just like everything else. And we have no idea what we're preparing our kids for, what kind of reality they're going to live in 10 years from now.
It's impossible. No hope
in there. No. So like, we shouldn't teach them stuff that they can look up on the internet. We should teach them, if anything, like a sound mindset and how to take care of their mental health and how to grow and how to stay positive and hopeful and stuff like this, how their focus and attention and enjoyment of life actually creates that enjoyable reality that they want. So, there's so much there. I'm looking forward to following up this with you in the future and see where this goes, and follow up with Rob and Sylvia and their amazing project down there, and Daniel and all that he does for the homeschooling community. And as you say, like, you were seen as a complete nutcase if you even suggested, like, when I grew, or even later than that, like, if you rewind the clock 10 years, only like crazy religious people were homeschooling. Like, that's the only option. Like, I need to homeschool because I have these ridiculous beliefs and I have to pump them into my kid. Like, that's the only reason you would homeschool. And now it's the other way around. Now it's the public system that are pumping insane ideas into the kids, and you homeschool to take them out of it. Like, it's fantastic. So good luck with everything.
Thank you. Happy to follow up when we're going to meet in Bulgaria, right?
I'm sorry to say, but I'm not going to Bulgaria. I had to skip that one this year because my schedule is insane. So, but I will go to Prague. Are you coming to Prague?
No, I'm taking my friend to Donington Festival.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll be there in spirit.
There's another conference, I think. I'm not sure about Riga because this will be in August when I'll be moving.
You should come to Riga. Like you can always move later or earlier. You should come to Riga.
All right, cool. I'll work around that. And then I got invited to come to a small conference in Hungary later in October. So,
Am I invited to that one? I have to check my calendar.
It just happened yesterday.
We'll see.
It was very, very spontaneous. So maybe you need to wait. I mean, you probably will. Yeah.
Well, we'll see each other eventually. I'm sure. If not, not in this year's cycle, next year's or the years after, or et cetera, et cetera. Lots of opportunities. And one of these things in Bitcoin, you end up going to more conferences as time goes on for some reason. They're addictive to a certain extent.
Just like Bitcoin Walk, to me, this is a weekly ritual that, you kind of build up this muscle and you're looking for, your clock is kind of, ticking the blocks towards the next Saturday. So it's every Saturday or every 1,000 blocks, because that's kind of how it works. So, in this sense, stars align, and we've got really cool community here in Edinburgh. I'm going to miss them, but I'm sure, we'll build equally cool community elsewhere in Madeira.
Theoretically, it's every 1,008 blocks.
Yes, And we walk for about 2 hours. So I'm kind of, you know, nudging it a little bit. But you're right, yes.
All right, fantastic. So the people, don't forget to brush your damn teeth and go to bitcoinwalk.org, either if you like walking or if you like filling in registration forms. It's a great page. And you make your own little chapter and just go walking and talking about Bitcoin.
I think what's important is you get to experience that firsthand. You get other people's perspectives, and there is tons of things you're going to learn. You know, it's such a humbling experience. Like I always recall one Bitcoin walk when I met a guy named Wabi. He was from Afghanistan. He was like a political refugee here. He came, he's probably, you know, age of my dad, and I could tell that he wasn't very IT literate, so to speak, but he came to Bitcoin Walk because he heard that, you know, it's possible to send value to Afghanistan from UK with Bitcoin. Try doing that with Barclays or, you know, with HSBC or any of those banks. You know, it's almost impossible, and if you can do it, you're going to pay hefty fee to make that happen. So those was one, you know, one of those kind of touching stories that I recall. And even though I'm pretty sure he didn't, you know, he didn't send Bitcoin to his family, you know, when he came back from the Bitcoin walk, one thing he took away from that is, you know, he was kind of questioning, like, what can I do here to make money? And because he was only in UK for like 2 or 3 weeks, since his arrival. I asked him, can you drive a car? It's like, yeah, I can drive a car. Well, you can be an Uber driver or, you know, deliver some stuff. And he was so grateful for that, you know, I feel like this is, That's great. You know, I love the fact that I could point him in this direction and maybe he took that and that could change his life.
Fantastic.
Yeah, stories like that are great. And connections you make in real life are always what you make of them, right? They can turn into anything. So it's a great initiative you've started, Jacob. And great to see. And so, as Knut said, go to bitcoinwalk.com. Org, is there anywhere else you'd like to direct our listeners to?
Sell your wheelchairs. Go on a walk.
It might be a bit ableist, Knut.
Yeah, okay.
Too much.
Sorry, out of taste.
We'll cut it out, yeah.
No, Knut making a fool of himself stays in sometimes.
God damn it. That's your job, Luke. Cutting these things out.
You do it too often for me to cut every single occurrence.
Too much editing. No, you know, I think with Bitcoin Walk, you know, the form is kind of free fall, and it's good to go out, you know, to touch grass, to basically talk to other people, because, you know, we're social animals, and we're spending so much time in front of our computers today. We don't really get to know other people outside of our circle that much. I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, conferences are great because this is where it happens. This is why we have so much energy when we go to those things. But Bitcoin Walk could be your kind of, you know, your local weekly conference, if you like. You can, you know, meet those people pretty much every Saturday if you want, or more regularly if you prefer. I think that, you know, Bitcoin Walk is, it's a very loose format. So I'm trying to guide people how we do that and share how we do that. You know, we go for the walk and we post something. We always take a picture called proof of walk. I always, you know, try to get somebody who's passing by to take the picture. On this picture, you know, we stay with a big flag with the Bitcoin Walk website address and so I'm now ordering another flag, the second version, which will say on the top, don't own zero Bitcoin. So whoever is taking the picture, they will get the message as well. hopefully that people will get inspired to maybe check it out.
It's genius. Awesome work you're doing. So thanks a lot for coming on. And if there isn't anything else, thanks again. And good luck with the move to Madeira and see you in real life, one of these days.
One of these days, exactly. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the day.
On a walk somewhere.
Fantastic. This has been the Freedom Footprint Show. Thanks for listening. All right. Thanks a lot for watching this episode of the Freedom Footprint Show. We hope you liked it. Leave us a comment or reply to the release thread on social media. Share it around. We appreciate all that. Let us know what you think. Start the conversation, all that. And don't forget to check out our sponsors. This is Bitbox, Orange Pill App, and the Bitcoin Advisor. You've heard us talk about this during the episode. Just go check them out. We're going to be in Prague here. Make sure to use code FREEDOM on your tickets if you haven't bought them yet. We'll also be in Riga when we release our new book, Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World. So looking forward to all that. And yeah, thanks for joining us on the Freedom Footprint Show. And we'll see you next time.
We certainly will. Onwards and upwards, comrades. Follow the orange glowing light.